Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. It is Friday, June 8th, 2018. I, of course, am Josh Nason, a writer, editor, and podcaster of the website. Killer of many websites, as Joseph Currier will tell you. And if actually I have told you, the many sites I've written for that no longer exist, but many do still. Bloody Elbow, Bleacher Report, and a couple others, but most of them have been defunct. So I am the website media killer. Anyway, UFC 225 coming up this weekend. Chicago, Illinois, and as I record this, we're not sure if we have a main event yet because of a weight-cutting issue, of course, Deja Vu, and Deja Vu with the co-headliner, or the headliner, rather, Yoel Romero. If you're listening to this, again, it's about 2:30 on Friday as I'm recording this intro, and Romero missed weight, missed it the first time by 1 pound, missed it the second time by 0.2 pounds, so he is not eligible to win the title. If the fight goes through on Saturday, he and Whitaker have to come to some sort of financial agreement to actually see if the fight goes forward. It's just a big mess. This is the second time that second time that Romero has missed weight going into a title fight. If you remember the middleweight championship against Luke Rockhold, that fight coming up, or what happened rather in January, February. And he missed weight for that, too, and ended up knocking out Rockhold in the third round and set himself up for a title shot. Even though he missed weight, he gets the shot, and he misses weight again. So a lot of things to still unfold there. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. So help me talk about UFC 225. Is one of our finest guests, someone that I enjoy talking quite a bit, Mike Bond of MMA Junkie. And this interview was recorded on Thursday night, so obviously we talked about the fight as if it was still happening and everything was still good and all that. But everyone else made weight, and show was still good. Talked a lot about news. Some different news bits have been happening coming out the past couple days, the latest on GSP. This weird feud with Dana White continues, and all types of other stuff. And also a look at UFC 225 and all the fun storylines and intrigue and all that good stuff as well. So without further ado, let's get to it. I was thinking about Yoel Romero. Mike Bond, MMA Junkie, coming up now. Josh Nason's Punch Out. Go. UFC 225 coming up this weekend, and a big fun show, big fun pay-per-view for once from top to bottom, and helping me break that down and talk about some other news and all that stuff is one of our favorite guests here, Mike Bond from MMA Junkie, returning once again. And let's see, Mike, we were just talking about basketball before we started, but the really tough question I had for you to start off with was it was something that doesn't have to do with sports at all. So my father-in-law is retiring. He is he's been in the insurance industry and has been with the state insurance commissioner here for a long time. He's one of the longest tenured commissioners ever, I guess, in the country. So he's finally retiring, people are saying all kinds of nice things for him. Really emotional week. So I was wondering, when the day that you retire, what do you hope that people say about you?
Oh, man, that's such a difficult thing. I mean, first of all, congratulations to your father on that. That's obviously a great thing to finally be able to do after a lifetime of hard work. So that's awesome. For me, I don't know. It's so hard to say just because I'm still so young in my career. I mean, are we assuming that I'm going to be doing, this kind of career path for the rest of my life? Who knows if that's the case? I mean, hopefully, as far as a worker, they say that I'm a, honest reporter and kind of always assured that my stuff was accurate and proper and, fair to all parties involved. And I think, as a journalist, that's all you can really hope to be remembered for.
My hope is that they always say that I picked out good lunch spots.
There you go. Well, I haven't met you before in person, I don't believe. Have we? I don't think.
No, we haven't.
And if so, we haven't had the opportunity to go for a meal. So I'll have to hold that from other people, or perhaps we can get that done at some point in the future.
I like that. Yeah, I like your answer. And really, it's because I think you hit it on the head. I can't even think of ever retiring. You know what I mean? I think in this industry, and especially media in general, I mean, this stuff isn't going to stop unless, the world comes to an end or something like that. I can't picture not doing what we do, it's weird. Maybe 20, 30 years from now, maybe we'll think otherwise. But I don't know. It's a weird thing to think about retirement. And you see people close to you going through it and see how kind of they deal with it. Some people are they are ready to go to the beach and they're like, I'm done. And then and this situation's a little bit different because he doesn't really like he knows it's time to go, but it's still kind of like he's been doing stuff for decades and decades and decades. And now it's like he does on Monday. He's not going to have to do anything. It's just it's a weird thing to see from this side. So I can't even picture it.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, of course it's different for everyone too, how they handle it. I mean, some people can't deal with that, can't deal with just all of a sudden stopping, you know, people like that are kind of used to, especially I feel like maybe the generation a little bit older than us kind of raised on a different type of hard work and work ethic, for them to kind of walk away from that after so many years, it's a real big stunner. And I mean, I guess if we want to tie it back to the MMA thing, it's kind of the same thing as when fighters retire after a long career, they don't really know what to do with themselves. And that's why you see so many guys consistently coming back and whatnot, because you know, after doing one thing for pretty much your entire life, it's hard to make that adjustment to something different, even if doing that thing different is nothing.
Yeah, and I was about to say the same thing. Yeah, fighters, they struggle. I think of two extremes. I think of BJ Penn, who we know cannot seem to quit and just doesn't, like, you can tell he's just uncomfortable with not being in the game. And then I look at the other end, is a guy that people don't talk about a lot, is Alan Belcher. So Alan Belcher, not a big star by any means, but he was a guy at middleweight and had some interesting fights and had a nice run, and you know, people,
some interesting tattoos.
It's interesting tattoos. I was going to say that. Yet the probably most notable for his terrible tattoos, the Johnny Cash tattoo. But he, I remember talking to him, and he was down in Alabama, and he had started this this huge kids martial arts center and this program for kickboxing and doing some other stuff. And he kept getting bigger and bigger. And at the time, this thing was huge. This is when he was still an active fighter. And this was kind of his, obviously, you know, he used it for training and all that stuff. But he really became an entrepreneur and was like, I wanted to build this into something big. And that, you know, after he left, it became easy, sustainable, and like kind of just did this whole thing. It was like, I think some injuries may have caused his career to be cut short, but you have the guy that, and BJ Penn, who's had opportunities to kind of do some other stuff and has BJPenn.com. And then you have, guys like Alan Belcher, who kind of took the martial arts thing and was able to really build something out of it and be like, okay, I'm good. And I'm still making money and, you know, making a lot more money than I ever did in the UFC probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone kind of has their own direction. It is curious when you see these fighters move on and kind of do something that may be more successful than they were in their fighting careers. And obviously, it doesn't go that way for everyone, but that's kind of what you hope out of a lot of these things, especially because I think we're now adapted to the reality that unless you're, you know, that top, maybe 5%, perhaps even less of the UFC roster, you probably aren't going to have enough money to live the rest of your life on from this MMA career. I mean, just look at a guy like Gleison Tibau, mm-hmm. who he was off for 2 years. He says he took that fight, I believe, against Islam Makhachev back at UFC 220 in January, got knocked out in a minute. And then he fought again very recently and said he had to take that fight because he was suspended for 2 years. He had no money coming in, all those kind of things. And this is a guy that at the time had fought in the UFC 27 times. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're fighting in the UFC 27 times, even if you're mid-range lightweight, you're not a guy that's, you know, maybe hovering outside the cusp of the top 15, maybe you make some runs, but you don't get that title opportunity, those main events, stuff like that, you would think you would still have enough money to kind of be secure for that while, but it just goes to show.
Yeah, T-Bow, Mr. FS1, that's how I always think of him. He just seemed to be a constant on prelims, even dating back to, like, the Spike days. Just, he was, like, he's always just on the prelims, either second fight or third fight. He's like a constant. It's like, didn't I just see him fight like a month ago? He's that like steadying force when it comes.
I would be curious. He might be a guy that's, you know, maybe fought on as many platforms as anyone in the UFC, because you have guys like Michael Bisping who's fought a ton in the UFC, but most of the sites are on pay-per-view or, yeah, you know, stuff like that. He's obviously headlined, but I haven't looked back. I'm sure Tibau, from fighting on Spike to, you know, FX to Fuel to all these things, I imagine he's fought on most, if not all of them.
Interesting. A good one to look up. So let's kind of take a spin around. We'll do the MMA buffet, as it will, looking at the front page of MMAJunkie.com and all kinds of stuff here. So we have, as we speak tonight on Thursday, we have the relaunch of the Professional Fight League is starting. And I got to be honest, I haven't paid too much attention to this, kind of just on the periphery, kind of understanding. I know that you're watching that tonight. But for those that are, obviously, by the time they're listening to this, the show will be over. But kind of just a general overview of what, How do you best explain what this thing is and how it's different?
I mean, it is a, they're doing multiple tournaments at once. I mean, of course, the thing that stands out is there's apparently going to be $1 million prizes for each of the winner of these tournaments. And I believe they're kicking off, the first event is heavyweight and featherweight, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting format. They kind of botched this first show, in my opinion, a little bit, especially with heavyweight. People who were paying attention probably saw that they had to move around and rematch make, I believe, three fights on the day of the weigh-ins, because in New York, where this event is being held, their bylaws say in heavyweight fights, you can't have a discrepancy of more than 25 pounds between the athletes. And pretty much all of their tournament fights were set up that way, which I don't know if that was just a glaring oversight and they didn't read the rules of the state they were hosting the event in when they decided to match make these cards, but they kind of had to move a bunch of things around and have different fights than were originally planned. It seems like, you know, it's going to go forward and it's going to be okay. But then you also had Sean Jordan come in 9 pounds over the heavyweight limit, which, you know, a guy like that, probably one of the favorites to win a tournament like this, one of the more well-known guys. And, you know, that could be a $1 million opportunity. He just cost himself right there. So that's kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, I mean, it's something, it's always kind of weird when we have the launching of a new fight promotion. I mean, obviously this was WSOF beforehand. It's a lot of the same people involved as there was with that operation, which I'm sure people are somewhat familiar with churning out guys like Justin Gaethje and Marlon Moraes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going to be curious to see kind of how this shakes out. In my opinion, maybe not the most ideal of planning for the first event. Just, you know, it happens to land 2 days before one of the biggest fight cards of the UFC of the year. All the MMA media, for the most part, are in Chicago covering this event. Not many people that, you know, you would typically have in New York, like the Ariel Helwanis of the world, who I'm sure would be there if he was not in Chicago, and you'd be getting a lot more, kind of access or spreading your message across, or getting, you know, more of your product out there through, you know, that sort of outlet and whatnot. So, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be curious to see how it plays out. I enjoy, you know, them doing a Thursday night, at least. It's not more, you know, one more Friday, one more Saturday you have to give up. So I think that was a good call by them. But you do wonder how that's going to affect Livegate and all those kind of things. So right now it's obviously very experimental. I think it's a pretty decent first card, and we'll kind of see how it all shakes out. Tournaments, of course, are always risky when you're asking guys to fight a few times within a few months. We'll see, you know, how many people actually make it to the end that advance, or what kind of injuries pop up. It's always kind of a wild card, but in some ways it's also pretty exciting too.
Yeah, we'll see, you know, whether a third promotion can sustain itself. Obviously Bellator is having some issues with drawing and drawing some numbers and on as time goes. And you know, it's kind of like, I think all these other promotions and really kind of the ones that try to be in the same universe as the UFC, even I guess the same galaxy, not even the same universe, but kind of like what is the draw and what's going to bring people in to watch. And yeah, and you hit on a point, something I think the Bellator does too often is they run these shows on weekends when the UFC runs obviously a lot of weekends, but the attention is paid so much to UFC that it's kind of like, oh, there's this other show going on too. And it's not really, I think there's obviously going to be some section of fight fans that are always they'll be like, okay, Thursday kicks off our fight weekend and we're going to do this and watch this and watch this. But I think what they're trying to attract, sometimes they're like, I'm watching something else tonight. I'm going to watch, I'm going to get my UFC fix on my fight fix on Saturday, and don't really see it as an opportunity to be like, okay, I'm going to watch fights all weekend long. Cause as we know, it's, you know, that's a big commitment in a lot of ways. So especially 225. Yeah. This show is getting so much attention, which it should. And it just, it's kind of like PFL is like, it exists, but it doesn't really exist in a way that people are going to, and then we'll see if the numbers tonight, I guess, is, you know, a lot of people are going to turn their heads or not, you know?
Yep, absolutely. I could imagine it being a bit of a rough start for them ratings wise, but who knows? I mean, things like this, you kind of need it to pick up. Some of their, say, there's some knockouts that happen that go viral. People are interested in seeing this guy that fights the next time in the semifinals or whatever. It's going to be a challenge to get people to commit and invest in following along with this journey, but it seems like they're absolutely invested in doing this. So we will see how it all shakes out. It's interesting nonetheless.
A couple other news bits and we'll get to 225. Brad Tavares is out of his, arguably one of the biggest fights of his career, big high profile fight against Israel Adesanya at the Top 27 finale. And it looks like possibly Thiago Santos could be a possible replacement. I haven't delved too much into this because obviously this broke a story you wrote for Junkie around 3:45 today, and I wondered about the Adesanya Tavares match because I am of the belief that if you have a guy that you think could be a good draw for you and a big star and a tentpole type of fighter for you in Adesanya, I think has some of the machinations to get there. I don't know if you put him in against a guy like Tavares that soon. We're going to get it, so we didn't have the choice. And now you have the chance to kind of walk it back. And you put him in there potentially against Thiago Santos, who is no joke. And he is he's been one of the most impressive fighters and underrated fighters, I think, the past 2 years. I'm interested in this potential matchmaker. I prefer someone maybe a little bit younger, less experienced, rather, and someone that Adesanya could beat to kind of keep that train going. I don't know if Santos is the best choice. What when you heard the news, what were your thoughts? And then obviously Santos potentially being the guy.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So there's also seemingly been a bit of development on the story as well. Oh. Ariel Helwani has reported that apparently Tavares is not 100% out of this fight. He has confirmed an injury, but apparently they're looking at second options to see if he was cleared, which is, interesting, of course, because Dana White was the one who came out and told TMZ that this fight was off and that Brad Tavares has broke his foot. And then you have Ariel coming out a bit later and kind of contradicting that report. And kind of what I've heard in following up on this is, yes, Brad is hurt. He's dealing with a foot injury. They won't comment too much on the exact extent of which, but they seem to believe, maybe with some treatment, they're bottom line, they're pushing to try to keep him in the fight. They're going to seek a second opinion, but it's out there. He's hurt. Israel Adesanya is obviously going to catch wind if, for whatever reason, the fight goes forward. And I think it's one of these situations where, his team, the fight is a little over a month away, I believe, almost actually exactly a month away from the time we're speaking. And he, they believe maybe a week or two of treatment, it could be better. But, the UFC obviously isn't willing to wait around. They need to kind of start moving because they can't go another 2 weeks with maybe he can fight, maybe he can't, and then find out in two weeks before the event that he can't fight. So I'm leaning towards feeling Brad Tavares isn't going to fight this fight, but you never know what could happen. Obviously, it's a main event for him, his first main event. He's been fighting in the UFC for a long time, really wanted this opportunity. So it seems like he's going to do everything in his power to stay in the fight. But the UFC, obviously they need to go on with their business. So they may end up just pulling him entirely before he can get that second opinion. We shall see. But they are looking for, talking to other people. Thiago Santos seems like an option. Dana White didn't seem 100% committal to that. But I know you can see him on Twitter now kind of posting things saying he wants the fight, retweeting people and stuff like that. So he's clearly very interested. It seems like they are absolutely intent on giving him like a top 15-ish guy to Israel Adesanya at this fight, regardless of whether it's Brad Tavares, Thiago Silva, or someone else, or Thiago Santos, or someone else. So we'll kind of see what happens there.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. We'll see. Yeah, obviously we'll see. I mean, he could, if he gets that Santos fight and that happens and he looks impressive, that's one thing. But, I guess we'll reserve judgment until that fight is actually made. Obviously, we'll see about Tavares as well. The other one, this is the first I'm seeing this as I sit down here tonight, is the ongoing feud between Dana White and GSP seems to continue. Lead story as of right now, Dana White, George St. Pierre is retired. Manager denies claim. So this kind of goes this very, very, very strange and well-documented bizarre relationship between these two since the 20th anniversary show. Very bizarre. I haven't really kind of delved into this too much. What is going on?
Time is a flat circle is what's going on. This is just the same. It's like these headlines just regurgitate each other, and it's just a circle over and over with Dana White and GSP. Like, I was looking back through some of the old headlines, and I don't think Dana White ever said he was officially retired, but in the past during that 4-year hiatus, but he said he's just not interested in fighting anyone. He's not coming back. Like, he doesn't have the passion to do this anymore. He questioned him being hungry enough, all these things that Dana White was doing. And then obviously GSP did end up coming back. He fought that fight, and I don't think Dana probably ultimately wasn't too happy with him giving the belt up 33 days later, but he does have that health issue. And yeah, Dana White went on Sports Center today up here in Canada, who's obviously, you know, the UFC's TV rights partner up here, and just did an interview with kind of one of their general TV anchors. I forget the woman's name, but she asked about George for an update, and he basically said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, George is retired. He's not interested in fighting anyone. We tried to make that Nate Diaz fight for UFC 227, and he doesn't want to do it, so he's not interested in fighting anyone. I consider him retired. I reached out to George's manager, his longtime manager, Rodolphe Boileau, and sent him the quotes that Dana had said, and he basically just pointed to the recent interviews George St. Pierre has done on Ariel Helwani's show and Joe Rogan's podcast, which I think collectively is about, you know, 3.5 hours of airtime with GSP. And he said multiple times over why he wasn't interested in fighting Nate Diaz. He didn't think it was a fight that made sense for him, that did anything for his legacy, et cetera, et cetera. And moreover, he's also not feeling at 100% still. He said he thought, you know, I think he went on Rogan's podcast, you know, maybe a week or two ago, and said, yeah, he's still not 100%. He wants to wait, you know, 3-4 more weeks before committing to any sort of fight, before putting the stress of a training camp or, you know, physical and mental stress of jumping into a camp on his mind. And he just wasn't ready for that yet because he wasn't really feeling in the condition. He wanted to see what happened a few weeks from now. So I think his manager, his side, they're all kind of, you know, confused by Dana's claims. He said they're not going to be losing too much sleep over it, was one of the quotes. So, I mean, this is just kind of classic Dana. You can tell, at least from my perspective, you know, he wanted George to fight Nate Diaz at UFC 227. George said no, and now he's saying he doesn't want to fight anyone, which is kind of, you know, typical stuff.
Yeah, I've said this repeatedly. This guy was one of the best stories of last year. He gets the win over Bisping after a 4-year layoff, and just it is like the pay per view draws well. It's almost like I'm gonna say Canada's reignited, but they're this guy, for those people that for some reason may have jumped on late to MMA and especially UFC, like this was the guy during the boom period, especially in Canada. It's huge. And I do not understand this adversarial relationship that White has with him. It's almost like he's trying to prove a point, or just that he cannot bury this hatchet from whatever happened after 167. And it is so strange. I just don't understand it. I really, really don't. This is like the latest chapter in this very bizarre story.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard to kind of get into. I mean, what it comes down to is George St. Pierre and his team are people who are not going to, you know, bend over for Dana White, and they're not going to allow him to control the narrative and say, you know, whatever he wants to say and like go along with it. Which, you know, is what Dana White has done to multiple other fighters throughout the years. George is one of the few that kind of, he does not have to do this. He's financially secure. He's a huge star. So when he does fight, it's obviously of huge benefit to the UFC on pay-per-view and all that stuff. But he doesn't have to do that. I mean, they don't really have any leverage over him at some sort. And they know if he does fight, it's going to be a marquee kind of fight. So it leaves them in a bit of a bind. It's more on to like what he wants to do. Yes, he can turn down the Nate Diaz's, but if another opportunity comes along, it's, you know, and he finds it's a good fit, or he gets himself in a situation where it's a good fit, you know, he's going to move forward with it, but that's going to be his call. He's not going to be pressured or, you know, told through the media that he's been cut, or, you know, these fake news, real news tweets, you know, like that kind of stuff isn't going to happen to George St. Pierre. So, you know, I'm sure from Dana White's perspective, you know, you are trying to build that massive card in LA. I believe the organization's first event there since they've been owned by Endeavor, and they probably want to put on a huge event in their backyard. That's why they were talking, you know, GSP versus Diaz, Dillashaw Garbrandt too, and Luke Rockhold, Alexander Gustafsson. Right now, the only one of those fights that's happening is Dillashaw Garbrandt too. So I'm sure there's a little bit of, you know, angst and frustration about them trying to put that big card when they can't get GSP to play ball. I'm sure that doesn't make the boss very happy.
Yeah. 225. This card is a banger from top to bottom, and this is great. This is what makes following the sport and covering the sport fun, is shows like this. And, you know, it's really something for everyone. I think for a hardcore fan and someone that really follows it from week to week, I think this is an A show for sure. I think for me, you know, I'm the casual fan, You know, I'd say it's a solid B. There's some names that, the pay-per-view card, I think it's going to be satisfying to kind of see some results for these top guys. I think some of the fights, we'll see what the quality is. But what I like about this show is it's a nice crossroads show and a lot of crossroads fights. I look at like the Fights Pass prelims and I look at guys like, Rashad Evans, we're trying to figure out, is there anything left? Is there like one last thing left in the tank against a very tough Anthony Smith? Or is this going to be the last time that, Evans rides in? And the fact he's fighting on Fight Pass, I think, is fascinating. I thought the fact that he fought against Sam Alvey and the mid-card of a Mexico show was fascinating. But this is also, to me, pretty crazy. Joe Benavidez, Sergio Pettis, a fight that I think a lot of people are sleeping on because it's not really getting much headlines. But that's going to be great. The fact that Clay Guida and Charles Oliveira are really what looks like potentially a really fun fight on paper is second from the bottom is crazy. But, you go up and down the card, there's intrigue in basically almost every single fight. And I when I was kind of jotting down the fights last night, I was doing it all from memory, and I got like 90% of the show. And these days, that's kind of tough to do, So,
for sure.
This show is, just from top to bottom, it is like, it's great. It's really, knock on wood that everything goes well with the weigh-ins, but it's a really great show.
Yeah, it is. You hit the nail on the head right there. I don't really know how much more I can add. Pretty much everything. There's a couple of things here and there. The curtain jerker, Mike Santiago versus Dan Ige. Like, I don't think anyone's, clamoring to see that fight or anything. But, besides that, and maybe that Rashad Couture, Cristilla, Rocha fight on the prelims, everything has a interesting storyline, some sort of narrative, whether it's implications on a fighter's fighting future, like a Rashad Evans or a title shot, like a Joseph Benavidez. And these are just the Fight Pass prelims. So, you got a little something in there for pretty much everyone. Even if you're sure we'll get into the CM Punk stuff later, but even if you're upset that he's on this card or he's getting a pay-per-view spot, et cetera, if you're dedicating your night to this, or your 6 hours or whatever it may be on Saturday night, I don't know how you could be disappointed with what they're presenting you, even with that fight on there.
I was trying to think of the, the biggest storylines or the biggest, the quickest questions I want answered after the show. And I think for the intentions of our website, which is primarily, pro wrestling fans, and obviously, Punk kind of plays in this role of both. And it's pretty amazing how many people just assume it's like they assume he's coming back. And then when he says he's definitely not coming back, they still say, oh, yeah, yeah, until you lose. And then, you're going to come back. And they are hell bent on this guy. They want him to come crawling back to pro wrestling. And I think that might be my biggest question coming this week. I think how Punk does in this fight, I think is important. Two is I am fascinated by this RDA Covington fight and I'm fascinated for a lot of reasons. And then I keep looking at that Rashad Evans fight, but I look at like, obviously there's the Holman Anderson fight because that's going to be your next contender. But I really want to see, there's so much intrigue. I'm like stumbling over myself. The Whitaker Romero fight. I think Romero wins, if he wins that fight, I don't know if there's an automatic rematch between those guys. But I wonder, I know Michael Bisping said he's retired. I wouldn't be surprised to see Romero, if he was to win that, call out Michael Bisping and really try to angle for that fight. And Bisping, I know he said he's retired, but I just wonder if there may be like one more left in the chamber. He's just like, F it. Let's just do this one more time and get this blood feud going, make a ton of money and then call it good. I wonder about that. So I was trying to come up with my three big questions or answer questions of this, but I came up with like five, but what, as you kind of look at this card, what's really standing out? What stuff do you need answered come Saturday night?
Man, a lot of it stands out to me. It's hard to, just throw a dart at the dartboard and you're going to hit something interesting on this card, right? Like there's storylines galore, every single fight. You always have to be interested to see, can Holly Holm finally get a win at 145? That probably sets her up if she can beat Megan Anderson, who obviously her UFC debut is long overdue and well anticipated too. How can she do against clearly the best fighter she's ever fought in Holly Holm? That's a big point of curiosity for me. And Holly Holm as well, because her getting this win, can set her up for a title shot at 145 or 135, in my opinion. I mean, it's crazy that she's 1-4 in her past five, and she's still the number one ranked contender in the UFC's official rankings at bantamweight, whatever stock you want to put in there. And of course, you know, she probably gave Cyborg her most competitive fight in a long time. So for her, I mean, this is kind of a do or die for Holly Holm, in my opinion. She really needs to do this if she wants any hope of sniffing, you know, a title shot again anytime soon. You'd wonder, if she does lose this, is she still willing to work her way all the way back up again? So yeah, a lot of interest around Holly Holm for this fight to me. And I mean, say what you want, I'm definitely excited to see CM Punk fight. Like, I don't care what anyone says. It's 0-1 versus 0-1, whatever, yeah. Man. Like, to me, he's such an interesting guy. Like, you obviously, he knows how to speak well and knows how to deal with media and stuff like that. So just watching him go through the paces, especially what happened to him, you know, earlier this week and over the past week with his whole court case and the lawsuit and everything, like, that's just absolutely incredible, like, what he's been going through. And to come and do this and have to fight now with already so much pressure and kind of everything on his shoulders, can he get it done, is probably, you know, one of the most interesting things to me. But those two title fights as well are totally money. I mean, they're going to be great. You mentioned an immediate rematch if Romero wins. I don't know, like, it'd be interesting because obviously, you know, Romero had to go back and win one after he lost. Whitaker has not defended the title or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be maybe a mistake to do that right away. I'd maybe make Whitaker win one, kind of build to that trilogy. But yeah, I guess I can drop an interesting note for you here. I have a column coming out, you know, sometime before the fight. I'm talking about title rematches, and this is actually the 50th time in UFC history where guys have had a rematch and a title's on the line, and it's the 28th time where both fights have been title fights. So kind of a lot of history going into that one. I mean, overall, out of those 49 previous, the guy who wins has won 30 of the rematches. So the overwhelming odds seem to go in Whitaker's favor, especially with him being the younger guy. So we kind of have to wait and see there. But Yoel Romero is obviously a physical specimen. If anyone can kind of do something like this, it's going to be him.
Yeah, he's that's why I'm leaning towards picking him for this, just because he happens just to pull these things out. He's like a complete bottom of the ninth fighter. Like, you look and you'd be like, I don't know, he may be losing this, getting tired. And all of a sudden, he, you know, one big swing and he closes the show, you know, hits it out of the park and wins it for the home team. So I'm fascinated by that. I mean, physical specimen. He's doing this at over, basically what, he's almost 40 years old, or he's 41.
41.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, people talk about, you know, the Tom Brady's of the world and all this. I mean, the fact that he's doing this, and granted, he got it started in the sport late, but still a lifetime of competing. And obviously people know his wrestling past and all that stuff. And he looks like he's 25, and it's just, he's got this strange personality. He gets involved in strange fights, and you always think, I mean, we'll see obviously what happens on Saturday, but kind of the you think of what could have happened had that Tim Kennedy situation not gone Romero's way, if they DQ'd him, and where do things go from there? And, you know, in MMA, there's a lot of those situations. But, you know, I was thinking about that today with, you know, what could have happened. But yeah, Romero's is a fascinating case. I want to go to Colby Covington, though, because he seems to be the guy that he gets headlines, but it's almost like people are very reluctant to give him props. And I think, I haven't seen a ton of interviews with him because I've seen enough, but I was watching one he did with Ariel last night, the 8 minute or so talk that he did. I think I understand why people don't like him. I don't think it's what he says. I think it's just because it doesn't seem convincing. It feels like, I think with guys like this, obviously, you know, there's the Connor types and the Chael types, and people are bringing it up in comparison, but those guys feel like they live the gimmick. Like, you can't that's who they are. And I think Chael has been able to do this. I mean, Connor obviously is a league by himself, but Chael he kind of understood the pro wrestling game and the talking game and studied it and did it in a way that became his persona. And obviously he has the one-liners and things like that, but, you know, that's like, you know, Don Cherry, you know, type stuff when it comes to that. But with Covington, it feels like he has a set of memorized lines, and he sometimes will stumble over them, and you can tell he's thinking about the line instead of just saying it. And I think that's what one of the big things that people are just like, you're a fake with this, because this doesn't, you seem like you're doing it, but you're not really living it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think he, like, the things he says and feels, I do think he believes some of them, but yeah, it just doesn't come across as natural. I mean, his way of speaking, his mannerisms and everything, they're just not like as smooth as a Chael Sonnen or a Conor McGregor. Like, even if you took those same lines and gave them, the same things, gave them to Conor or Chael or whatever, like, it would just come across a lot better just because the way they speak and how kind of smooth their execution and everything is. And yeah, you watch Kobe and kind of stumbling over it. There's a little bit of everything that you said there. So yeah, it's not totally convincing in that way, but some of the stuff he says is, you know, I guess maybe a little clever, a lot of it very insulting. Maybe some of it a little bit over the line, but you can't say that it hasn't built interest in the fight. I mean, whether it's authentic or not, or like you love it or you hate it, I could see the numbers and the video views and on his stuff, and whether it's to go there and, you know, downvoted on YouTube and not even watch the interview or like something like that, people are paying attention to him and they are absolutely going to tune in to see him lose, which they want to do. I mean, he might not lose. I think this is a very winnable fight for him against RDA, even though a lot of people are thinking he's going to get destroyed. I think it's a pretty good style matchup for him. So his clear intent is to get people to hate him and people to watch his fights. And you can't say he hasn't done that successfully. So at the end of the day, you know, he got this fight because of that. Yes, he beat Damian Maia. He did what he had to do there, but his resume isn't the most impressive thing of all the welterweight contenders. There was other guys available, stuff like that. And he was just the one. And obviously it's because he put something a little extra on it.
And RDA, not only can RDA win another title, be it an interim title on Saturday, he also has a chance to be the Dan Henderson to Covington's Michael Bisping. If he has a big, convincing win, a satisfying win, he becomes a folk hero and almost kind of has this lore. You know, obviously the Henderson knockout was iconic in its imagery and everything, but this, you know, RDA has his chance in a lot of ways and to push up his persona and his whole thing a lot more and potentially set himself up for something big. He's kind of being, I would say, overlooked a little bit, but you know, he's a fascinating case. We do almost a whole separate podcast on him. He is a guy that was just kind of a middle of the road dude and then just went on this awesome career surge and finds himself in the co-main event of one of the biggest shows of the year. He's a guy that I think deserves a little bit more examination.
Absolutely. RDA is a very fascinating character, and he's accomplished. I mean, to think that this guy came in and I believe he lost his first two UFC fights back to back, possibly both by stoppage. I know one was that, you know, unforgettable highlight knockout to Jeremy Stephens. So yeah, this is a guy that has been through the slumps. I mean, yeah, you could definitely liken him to Michael Bisping. Obviously he has like a different skill set and, you know, maybe more highlights on his reel, but he is, you know, if he wins this fight, particularly one of the best fighters in UFC history, certainly one of the best Brazilian fighters. So he's done a lot for himself. And yeah, if he can get up here and win the second belt, go on to have a fight with Woodley, maybe the Conor thing comes back around for him finally. I mean, who knows how things would look now if he actually got that fight and won it. Who knows? Like, that would be something all of in itself. We could be talking about a completely different, could be talking about Conor very different. You never know. So for him, yeah, you got to feel good for him because he seems genuinely like a very nice dude. Every interaction I've had with him has been very positive, and he seems to, you know, treat people well and with respect. He doesn't like to talk trash. He's kind of a model fighter.
Final question. What will be the one thing people will be talking the most about come Sunday morning?
That's tough, man. I mean, if Colby Covington wins, you can't imagine it's not that. Especially because, you know, he's going to come out on absolute fire in the post-fight interview, I assume with Joe Rogan, who he said some things about but took them back in his maybe only apology ever. And then it's going to be CM Punk for sure, too. I mean, you're going to have the same thing that you had last time where the fighters are going to trash him. They're going to say this guy is getting a, you know, whatever, half a million dollar payout. and all that. We're just going to go through the same things, especially if he loses. He doesn't belong, this and that. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens if he wins. Like, if he gets a devastating knockout or something like that, I think that would be very, very compelling, because then it's all about what happens next. Like, what does the UFC do with this guy now? Because they basically found pretty much the only person that they can book him to in a fight against. That's like somewhat logical and somewhat fair. So what's the next step in the CM Punk story? You know, as much as that may piss people off, and maybe I'm just catering to your audience a little bit here, but I think it's gotta be that.
I think the true answer is that Carl Esparza is going to have a 10-second knockout of Claudia Dillia and then cut a blistering promo on the mic and become the biggest woman star. I think that's probably the obvious one.
She wants that rematch with Rose. I want my belt back.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Punk. I think I win or lose, I think he'll be the top star, the top notable kind of talking point after this. And I think with a loss, I think he's done. I think with a win, yeah, as you mentioned, it puts him in interesting kind of question, like who next? And I think they just have to, you know, probably someone from the Fight Contender Series or something like that. But, you know, my hope is that if he wins and he wants to keep doing this, we're not waiting almost 2 years to have it happen again. I think, you know, that's getting a little bit, because he's a guy that's getting up there in age too. So, you know, kind of interesting stuff there.
Well, and speaking of that, I'll just make one last point kind of about this card. Since you mentioned age there, I tweeted this out the other day, but there's, I believe it's 9 fighters on this card who are between 36 and 41. There's 8 fights on this card that have at least an age discrepancy of 8 years between the fighters. So you kind of look at this and potentially a changing of the guard. Like, you know, Romero loses at 41. What happens to him? I think RDA is fine. But then you have a Holly Holm if she loses, Arlovsky if she loses, CM Punk if he loses, Alistair Overeem if he loses, Rashad Evans if he loses. You kind of have all these older characters that if they don't come through, on one side we have a changing of the guard and kind of some new faces emerging in those respective divisions, but on the other side of the coin we have you know, some notable former champions, high marquee fighters that would be in a very interesting spot in their career.
Yep, good points. Mr. Bond, where to let the people know where they can follow you on social media, where they can read your stuff. You mentioned the column earlier, but the floor is yours. Go ahead and do your unleash your inner CM Punk.
Well, pretty much everything right now is on MMAJunkie.com. Social media, Twitter, Instagram is just Mike Bohn, MMA, MikeBohn, MMA. And email MikeBohn, MMA@gmail.com. It's all kind of on my Twitter file there. So if anyone needs to hit me up about anything, don't hesitate to do so.
Yeah. And if you're into numbers, unique facts, all that stuff, as Mike dropped a few of them on this show, does that all the time, and fascinating stuff. And the guy, I think single-handedly has changed just the whole weight cutting policy around, but with that one tweet and that one story, what have you, I think that was I think that stuff matters. It gets people talking, and you're a man of numbers and we love you for it.
Thank you, brother. I very much appreciate it.
Mike Bohn, thanks so much for joining Josh Nace's Punch Out. And as the kids say, enjoy the fights. All right. Big thanks to Mike Bohn for dropping by. Obviously, you can follow him on Twitter, follow his good work there. That column that he talked about is up on MMA Junkie now. And of course, I won't say outdated, but part of it is interesting. Because obviously it was about, you know, rematches and title fights. And as of this point, of course, we don't know if that fight's actually going to happen. Let me get you the latest here as I'm looking here. A minute ago, and again, this is 2:35 on Friday, East Coast time. Errol Helwani just spoke to Yoel Romero's manager. He said an hour into the extra 2 hours they had to cut the 1 pound, the executive director of the Illinois Commission told Romero to stop the cut and weigh in. They were told it's a medical call. So they said a doctor was with them and wasn't stopping it, though that doctor couldn't overrule the head of the commission. It took them a while to get downstairs, but they firmly believe, if given the full 2 hours, he would have made it. So this is a very strange situation. Helwani also saying Romero earlier was walking by, being held up by people, wincing in pain, didn't look so good. And usually, let's see, Romero hired Lockhart and this other guy, Leith, on Tuesday to help with a weight cut. Usually the guys prefer at least 10 days notice. This is a special case. They got him all the way down to 0.2 over. But yeah, what a joke. What an absolute joke. And this is funny. Another guy, let's see, it doesn't seem like Dana White is aware of what's going on with Yoel Romero. Just gave an interview at UFC at Wrigley Field and was still promoting UFC 225 as an event with two title fights. I find that hard to believe. He doesn't know what's going on, but, you know, it's a promoter, right? He's got to be able to, you know, lie and do all that stuff. This is just a mess. The commission thing is a mess. All of a sudden, they decide to start the weigh-ins 20 minutes early today, which was weird. Joe Curry and I were talking on Slack. We were talking about the in-bed for the post. And he said, because of CM Punk, and he said, Punk's already weighed in. I'm like, no, he hasn't. The thing doesn't start for another, like, half an hour. And he's like, no, it's already started. And I was like, what the hell? And two sites, Junkie and MMA Fighting, both had the weigh-in starting at 10, and it seems that they just started 20 minutes early just because. And then you read about this thing with, you know, they gave Romero two additional hours because it was a title fight, I guess. And then you're reading this, like an hour in the weight cut, the commission's like, no, you're all done. It's just very, very bizarre. This sport, it's great in a lot of ways, and I'm glad you're listening to this show because it's probably a big reason you're listening to shows because we talk about the UFC and MMA. But sport really sucks in a lot of ways. This is a complete joke. The commission's a joke. Romero missing, this whole thing is a joke. The whole weight cut thing is still, no one seems to know what to do with it. And there's no uniformity in the commissions. There's, you know, different sets of rules here, different sets of rules there for in cage stuff. And, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to a lot of stuff, and everything's really fly by see your pants. And as a pro sport, it's going to be on ESPN like 6 months, 7 months. And we're still dealing with this stuff. Like, I don't know. It is very frustrating. I can see why so many people have dropped out of the sport. And I understand to an extent this is fun because it gives, you know, it's newsworthy, henceforth fun because it gives people stuff to talk about. But this isn't fun to talk about. Like, I'd rather be looking forward to this and not be questioning whether or not this fight's actually going to happen. What's good is that the rest of the show is still great. And my thought is this fight is still going to happen. But, you know, what if Romero beats Whitaker? And he's not going to get a title opportunity again. It's like, what, the UFC is in a bad position there. They gave him this fight because obviously it's the main event of a pay-per-view. I don't think a lot of people are buying it because of that, but it would be a bummer for everyone if that fight was not on the card. I mean, Whitaker hasn't fought since, we didn't really talk about this with Mike, but he hasn't fought since the summer of 2017. I mean, like, young guy, he's had injuries and all this stuff, but, like, you know, he's a middleweight champion. This title has not been defended really in a long time. Obviously, there was the whole Bisping thing and GSP. It just, this division needs to move forward. And I don't know, this doesn't feel like we're really moving forward. And it's very frustrating. So I'm kind of just venting. And I hope you guys are venting a little bit too, and you're understanding, you're agreeing, or maybe you're not agreeing. But this is just really frustrating to be dealing with this on a Friday afternoon, right? It should be, you know, drinking a beer or getting ready at work, drinking a beer at work, you know, getting ready for this weekend and these fights and everything. But, yeah, frustrating stuff happening in UFC, and obviously by the time you listen to this, we may have some sort of insight into the what's going to go on with this title fight, but I'm guessing it's probably not going to be for a couple hours until they kind of figure everything out, make Romero pay a little bit more when it comes for money, and then we'll kind of just go from there. Let's see. Other than that, UFC-wise, you know, big weekend coming up with New Japan show, everyone's really excited about. PFL was last night. We obviously talked about it really briefly on the show. I watched probably two or three fights last night, and it was okay. Really, the concept is what's going to drive people being interested in it with the points and all that. Even though I wonder, you know, if guys are after, you know, during the season that they're doing, if guys are you know, really behind on points, are they going to be that interested in fighting? Or, you know, I think we'll kind of have to see how that goes. But, you know, last night saw a couple of interesting fights. But, you know, these are essentially, you know, the guys that get dropped from UFC or and even Bellator. So it's kind of, I don't say third stringers, but, I mean, there's some names, but there's not like a huge amount of draws on this. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. We'll give it a shot. But I watched a couple fights last night, and it was just normal fights to me. Really, the big draw and the difference is a point system. And I don't know. Who knows if anyone's really that interested in that. But we'll see what happens this year. And with all that being said, we will let you go and get on with your weekend. Thanks for listening and hanging with me and everyone on the site as well. You can obviously listen to the archives for 101 other shows, all types of guests from MMA and wrestling as well. Talking about all types of stuff, not just week-to-week events, but kind of just, you know, media stuff and everything like that. So if you really enjoy you know, MMA and the business MMA and even some wrestling. Check out this, some of the shows in the archives. I certainly appreciate it. A ton of guests there and a lot more to come. So we'll get you out of here. Thanks to Mike Bond. Thanks to all you for listening. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, cut that weight and insert a catchphrase here.